afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, February 8th, 2022. And howdy do, Dave. Yeah, I'm a poet.
Well, hello there, Melody.
Hello.
I want to tell you to go fly a kite, but you might get the wrong impression.
You're fired.
It's happy kite flying day.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, how about that? Every February 8th encourages kite flying and kite making. Enthusiasts across the country mark the day by launching their kites or making plans to attend festivals. Well, when you can do so. You may not know that kites date all the way back to 470 BC in China, of all places. It's a wonder then there's no kite flying competition in this year's Olympics. Go figure.
Go figure.
How about it?
Those dirty ratted communists.
I know. How about it? What's going on in the markets today?
Well, let's go ahead and take a peek at the gold prices. We have gold up $6. Almost seven at $1,827. Silver is up 19 pennies at $23.29. Platinum was up $14 at $1,042. Palladium was down 24 at $2,332. Excuse me. The USDX was stronger by 0.18, 95.60. Crude oil was down $1.64 at 89.68. And the paper markets today, I'm sure they were all green. They were. Not quite sure what powered these markets. But the Dow was up 371 points at 35,462. The S&P was up 37 at 4,521. NASDAQ was up 178 at 14,194. Asian markets were strong. Hang Seng was down a little bit. European markets, the FTSE was down a little bit. Everything else was green. And the 10-year yield, 1.96%. 1.96%. Everyone is just happy. And nothing matters. I guess there's chatter that supposedly Macron, the French president, talked to Putin, and Putin has promised he was not going to go into Ukraine. So I guess that's making everybody happy. Not quite sure how true all of that is, but that certainly was one of the things that probably made people feel happy today. Do you think maybe?
Oh, for sure.
So we're not quite sure what Macron's power or relationship he has with Biden in order for Biden to open up with him to confirm that. But you know, I bet it has something to do with that energy and shutting down those pipelines if that happens and so forth and whatnot. And so we'll just have to continue to see. Right, Dave?
Right on. That's all we can do, really.
Yeah. Well, but you know, it's hard to believe that you'd go through all that trouble and not do anything. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know what it's kind of like, but anyway, well, I guess he was making a point.
Perhaps Macron is the one who's going to end up having given Putin some face-saving opportunity. Perhaps Putin has decided, well, maybe I better not do this right now. Who knows?
Good point there. Good point. You always have to have that escape, that ways to escape. So yeah, you're kind of right about that. do you want to go ahead and talk about the gold and silver futures?
Well, you know, like spot prices today, gold and silver future prices were up modestly in U.S. trading today. Overnight losses were deemed by the precious metal bulls, anyway, to be a bargain buying opportunity. So investors were buying on the golden dip. Otherwise, some routine backing and filling on the charts has been featured as the fresh fundamental inputs are awaited. I'm not sure how they're going to change, but I mean they're good and always have been. Earlier this afternoon, gold futures were up roughly $7, closing in on 18.29, and March COMEX silver was last up over 15 cents. At 23.23. More and more precious metal analysts believe the Fed will be aggressive and raise the Fed funds rate by now 50 basis points at its March meeting, as half of the Fed futures investors are projecting. Historically, rising interest rates and rising inflation have been bearish for stocks and bullish for gold and silver. I think Thursday is going to be a real important time when the latest CPI for January is released. People expecting it to come in at 7.2% year over year. And if that CPI number meets market expectations, that would be considered an even hotter number than it has been, Melody.
Well, you know, unless they lie about that one, too, like they do so many other ones. I shouldn't say lie. They exaggerate or they – who knows, you know?
Well, you know, it's disconcerting.
Yes, it is.
Is what it is, because it just results in a lack of trust.
It's incredible.
And what we're being told are – $20+ trillion economy is all about.
Yeah. And it hasn't helped our trade deficit, Dave. Hey, a new record, $859 billion. That's the U.S. trade deficit last year as, you know, we continue to buy foreign made electronics, a bunch of toys, clothing. The trade gap, the difference between what the United States sells and what it buys from foreign countries surged 27% last year from $676 billion in 2020. So, those are some pretty big numbers. U.S. exports, rose 18%, but imports rose more, climbing 21%. To nearly $3.4 trillion. And I guess that with millions of people sheltering at home, spending on dinner out, movies, or concerts evaporate, that money moved almost overnight into goods like cell phones, yard equipment, furniture. We do just have to continue to buy, don't we? We just can't sit at home and do nothing. We have to buy.
We are a nation of buyers. Thank you, Amazon.
We certainly are. We're a nation of debtors. Because people don't buy that with money they have, most people. Import goods soared 21% last year to $2.9 trillion. Imported goods from China rose 16%. And the goods trade deficit with the Chinese rose nearly 15%, Dave.
Well, the first time the trade of goods deficit has cracked the $1 trillion mark. Overall, the U.S. ran a $1.1 trillion deficit in the trade of goods with the rest of the world, Melody. Now, that was partly offset by a $231 billion surplus in services like banking, education, and tourism. You got economist Chris Rupke, who's saying the world isn't back to normal yet when it comes to the pattern of trade in goods and services that existed before the pandemic, but he believes the gap could narrow, depending on what happens with the virus, allowing more foreign tourists to visit the U.S., because foreign traveler spending counts as a U.S. services export.
I know. I wonder what year they added that in.
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to check that out. I bet you it's been. I bet you it's been a while.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Oh, well, talking about the trade deficit, you have the tariffs. Remember, you know, the Trump administration added tariffs. And I believe in tariffs. I think we should have tariffs. I just didn't think tariffs were going to bring back the number of jobs that was promised. I think tariffs are a good thing. But now they're going to be taken off. They were taken off the EU, the steel makers last year. And this was reported yesterday that the U.S. and Japan have announced a deal to remove tariffs from about 1.25 million metric tons of Japanese steel. The new deal, it does exclude aluminum, is going to take effect on April 1st. And it requires Japan to take, this kind of cracks me up, concrete steps to fight global excess steel manufacturing capacity. And, of course, it's all targeted and centered towards China. Cool. Joint U.S.-Japan statements that Japan would start to implement within 6 months, appropriate domestic measures such as anti-dumping, countervailing duty, and safeguard measures to establish more oriented conditions for steel. The fact of the matter remains, you know, the tariffs were there. I believe they should have left them alone. Our prices probably, we probably did pay some, and I guess this is a move probably to reflect or to help with the inflation. But, you know, these people should pay duty sending their product to our country. We're the ones that are buying it, Dave.
Well, you know, interestingly, unlike the EU and especially the UK, which is said to be seeking a similar deal with us, Japan did not impose retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
Yeah, like whiskey, motorcycles, and the good old denim. Now, the Japan deal comes as U.S. steel prices are starting to fall back from record highs. Of course, a lot of that was spiked by the strong demand and pandemic-driven supply constraints. Which, of course, has contributed, they say, to high inflation throughout the economies of the world. So I don't know what happens. We know that the Steel Manufacturers Association says overall that it's a strong deal for American steelmakers. Shows that,
that
we. What's that?
I said, how would that be?
Well, he says, Phil Bell, their president, right, we shouldn't take a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to our jobs, environment, and economic growth. So I guess they must think it's going to be good, better for competition. Perhaps
for
US
who?
Steel, well, for they've got to be thinking for U.S. steel manufacturers. I mean, even though, well, I don't know. It's certainly it's going to be good for end users in the country to not be paying the Japanese tariff. But I guess we'll see months down the road how it ends up, particularly in the construction industry. We didn't hear anything about these steel tariffs, aluminum tariffs, how they were affecting the car industry. I mean, that's all been about the chips, supposedly, both here and abroad. So I'm not sure I get it, but here's a case. We're just telling you what we're seeing.
Yeah, because the tariffs would have made the U.S. steel more competitive. You know, but we get very little steel from Japan anyway. We don't get that much, but we get some. I don't know how much we get from Europe. But, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. You know, and again, you know, you could probably debate both sides of it. But the thing of it is, you know, they were there. They were paying to have their product brought into the country. They should stay there. And I don't, you know, there were some jobs that were created, I think, from these tariffs, but certainly nothing that was ever promised. You know, again, you're not going to bring manufacturing back into this nation in any form in a major way. It's just not going to happen. I heard they're going to build a plant, I think, in Tennessee. It's going to create 500 jobs or 800 jobs. It has something to do with the batteries for electric vehicles, right. Charging stations, I believe. That's a lot of good jobs, absolutely. Anyway, let's go on. Iran nuclear talks resume in Vienna. Negotiators from Iran and the remaining parties to agreement, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, China. The U.S. has participated indirectly in talks, you know, mainly because we withdrew from the accord back in 2018. I guess maybe that's why we've seen a little bit of a drop in oil prices for the 2 days of that, in addition to Russia, Dave.
Yeah, that could certainly have dropped it a little bit. Good news, perceived good news. I mean, we know the negotiations have been dragging on for a long time. You know, since the new hardline government in Iran took over, we got the three Western European participants who've been warning for a while that time's running out to bring these talks to a successful conclusion. Still a lot of posturing going on with, particularly with, you know, all these sanctions still on Iran and Iran beginning to purify its enriched uranium, getting closer to levels that Western scientists say could be used to make weapons. So it's a big shell game right now.
It certainly is. And I hear the music, so we're heading into our break, and we'll be returning here in just a few short moments. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And it's time for our weekly segment, and it's an interesting one. It's about retiree health care costs, Dave. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, well, Melody, if you're anticipating that Social Security benefits are going to help cover most of your retiree expenses, you're in for a big letdown, I'm afraid. Now, while your retirement income from America's foremost, we'll call it insurance program, will undoubtedly be helpful in supporting you in your later years, you know, it turns out it's nowhere near enough to provide for everything you need. In fact, a troubling new report shows it's possible that about a third of your entire benefits check will be eaten up by one key expense we all face as seniors, assuming you're 65 and over, if you receive close to the average Social Security check. And that's it. And there are a lot of people who just rely on that. This huge cost can leave you with little left in your check for particularly the fun stuff. According to an AARP study released in December, retirees with traditional Medicare ended up spending an average of about $6,200 a year on covering the cost of premiums and out-of-pocket medical services. The average Social Security check this year is $1,657 a month. That equates to just under $20,000 a year. Thus, a retiree with the typical benefit and average medical expenses could end up spending over 31% of their entire Social Security check on paying these out-of-pocket expenses related to their medical needs. Certainly, it could come as a big shock to many seniors, especially as a number of them anticipate that Medicare insurance the government offers will take care of most of their health needs. It won't, and it doesn't. It's also a surprise that can lead to financial, well, devastation if you weren't prepared to cover this big cost and were counting on your Social Security benefit to help you pay other bills. So what can current retirees, I'm saying current retirees, due to cope with this unpleasant surprise? Well, unfortunately, if you're already retired and are faced with medical expenses that are higher than you anticipated, you don't have a whole lot of options, good ones particularly. It's certainly too late to go back in time and save more for medical services as a senior. I guess you could go back to work, but good luck in finding a job if you have gray hair. But that doesn't mean there's no way to salvage your retirement. Here's some steps experts say you may want to take, and they include these. First, shop around during Medicare's open enrollment period. There are alternatives to traditional Medicare, such as Medicare Advantage plans, or Medigap to fill coverage gaps in traditional Medicare. While you may end up raising your premiums by choosing more comprehensive coverage than traditional Medicare, you could also lower out-of-pocket costs when you get to the end of the year with those plans, so you have net savings. Next, see if you're eligible for Medicaid. I mean, it is possible to get additional medical coverage from Medicaid if your income and resources are low enough, particularly if you're single and your only source of income is your Social Security check. Medicare sometimes covers things Medicare doesn't and can often help keep out-of-pocket costs down. Then talk to your doctors. Your care providers may be able to help you find cheaper prescriptions. Good luck with that. Or take advantage of services Medicare pays more for. Your doctor can also help you practice good preventive care habits to hopefully stave off serious and thus costly medical issues. Now, if you're not retired, what can future retirees do? Well, this depends on how old you are, but save some money, ladies and gentlemen. You should be dedicating, a portion of your income now to cover these extra retirement costs, preferably in a health savings account, which provides a tax break if you're saving for medical services. In any event, it's a wake-up call that you need to build healthcare spending into your retirement plans, particularly as we live longer. Now, by preparing for medical costs in advance, you won't be faced with financial shock when you start to need costly health services. You can make it more likely your money lasts longer throughout your golden years, even with big doctor bills that, well, unfortunately, at some point are usually inevitable. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, that's a great one, Dave. And, it is something. I mean, time sure goes by fast, and before you know it, you're at that age, and things can pop up and spring up that you're not really – and again, it's planning. And we talk about planning and being prepared all the time on this program. And this is just another, I mean, you can feel great today and all your tests can all be, just positives and so forth. But, things change. And yes, I'm only 39, but this is what I've been told. So
you got lots of years left to save.
Yeah, I can start saving. I'm going to save with gold and silver. So 1-800-375-4188. That's who I'm going to call for my health savings account. So I don't think this is a – I mean, this is – everybody knows this, Dave. And I get this is their job and so forth. And, I'm not a fan of the feds and everything. The San Francisco Fed guy came out and he says, the economy is not at full employment. Okay. We know that. Doesn't everybody know that, Dave? Or we just...
Wish they did.
Yeah. And he's talking about not getting there until 2024. We're in 2022. Now, this was a note that was published yesterday by the San Francisco Fed. Now, that's important because one of the dual mandates of the Fed, they always call about, is full or maximum employment. Well, no one exactly says what full or maximum employment means. Most economists believe it's between 4 and 5%. Shows that the Labor Department U3 headline unemployment is a joke and should immediately be replaced by the U6 rate. And but again, they wouldn't get the numbers that they need to make everybody feel warm and fuzzy. January's non-seasonally adjusted and more accurate U6 rate is almost 8% and includes the discouraged workers. And that's those Americans who want a job but who haven't looked for one in at least a month. Plus, it includes those working part-time, and they want a full-time job. The comparable U3 headline rate is 4.4% Record job openings, worker shortages, and rising wages suggest a very tight job market. And that means the Fed policymakers say is one reason they feel it's time to start raising interest rates next month. So basically, Dave, they're raising interest rates on false information.
Well, you know, I think about what you asked. Do the American people know that we're not anywhere close to full or maximum employment? And I would venture to say, and I'm going to look this up, see if there's anything out there to this effect, that if you surveyed the everyday American, that they would say, I would say a strong majority would say, no, we're not close to full or maximum employment. I mean, the fact that even the experts have a hard time explaining what it is. I mean, it really used to be 4 and 5%, 4 to 5%. I'm not even sure that's the number or that's the metric that should be used in determining whether we are at maximum or full employment, you know, in terms of, you know, the Fed fulfilling its mandate, which presumably is a good thing. But San Francisco Fed economists say labor force participation and the employment to population ratio, those are probably metrics we ought to be talking more and more about, saying that they're well below trend. And that's suggesting the labor market is short of the Fed's maximum employment goal. Now, we can spend a whole lot of time talking about this, debating the pros and cons. Perhaps we end up missing the trees for the forest as we get there. But, you know, again, the Fed has signaled it's going to start raising rates in March after keeping them near zero for the past couple of years. Policymakers say the move will help tamp down inflation, running at its highest in just about four decades. And they also say that with labor markets as strong as they are, the economy no longer needs the extraordinary level of support it's been getting from the Fed. Well, all this talk, Melody, of full or maximum, I think perhaps is better directed at what the Fed is full of.
Yeah.
Now, the Fed research published yesterday suggests that labor markets could get stronger if this fading pandemic allows particularly more women and retirees to return to the workforce.
Well, you know, there's, you know, women supposedly are still out of the workforce. Men's labor force participation rate was up to 70% in January. Women's rate is just 58%. I'm old fashioned. I think women should be at home raising the children. But we live in an age where things are too expensive. They need those two incomes. And so the woman has to work. I don't know if it's, so to me, I think there's a difference between having, has to work, and to a woman who just, you know, wants to work. I think if you ask a lot of women, they'd want to stay home and raise their children, be home when the children come home from school, and, be, you know, and raise them the way that they're to be raised. But, it's not the world we live in anymore. And, but they think that with women not being back to work yet, that it is holding back the economic recovery, keeping women on the sidelines at a time when companies are often desperate to hire. You have women with young children at home who might have considered going back to work, likely couldn't because of unstable school and child care schedules. And it is true, Dave, these schools, none of them agree on anything. I mean, it's just like, it really is amazing what's going on with the schools. It truly is. And it's this whole thing has just been with so many mixed messages and lack of information. And it's a crime. truly is a crime. So, but anyway, since there's still a shortage of child care workers, you know, women are in a tough spot. They can't go back to work, Dave.
Yeah, and there's no apparent fix on the horizon. Child care providers already operate on tight margins, and they certainly don't pay well. In many cases, more than glorified babysitters.
Well, then what I want to know then, Dave, is why does it cost, you know, $1,000 a week for child care at some of these places or more?
Well, I mean, these places are regulated by the states, and some states have more stringent regulations. But by and large, they require essentially more paid people in the, quote, classroom per student, per child. And you know, even though they might be making $10 an hour, maybe 15 in some states that have mandated that as a minimum wage, I think that's driving a lot of the costs. And certainly the owners of these daycare centers, even the corporate ones, have very, very slim margins. And the owner, I know, 25 plus years ago when we had our, started out our kids in daycare, because both of us worked, I mean, the turnover rates were so high. I mean, you almost didn't know from month to month who the faces were that you're going to meet for the first time when you took your son or daughter in there. But my point is that even the owners of these daycare centers often were running these as second jobs because they couldn't afford and probably still can't to just do that. So you might have the CEO of a company that starts a daycare center for their own employees. You know, they end up being the CEO or the head of that as well. But it doesn't matter that if, you know, if they're just making $5,000, if that off of the daycare center, because they have their corporate salary to get them by.
Right.
But yeah, we sort of got off the track there a little bit. But
hey, no doubt, it's a tough job. A friend of mine, when I was, her mother had a daycare and managed one, and I worked in it for a day.
No,
it's like, thanks, but no thanks. Love the little babies, but hard work. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me?
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody in the office taking care of clients. This final segment, call her at 1-800-375-4188. Before I get to my main topic of this final segment today, in a flurry of diplomacy across multiple continents, Joe Biden met with Germany's new chancellor yesterday and vowed that the crucial Nord Stream 2 Russia-to-Germany gas pipeline will be no more if Russia further if Russia invades Ukraine. Vladimir Putin shot back that the U.S. and its allies are the only ones talking invasion. As Melody mentioned in the first segment, Putin and France President Emmanuel Macron met for more than 5 hours in Moscow at the same time that Biden and Chancellor Olaf Scholz spoke at the White House, trying to defuse this crisis before armed conflict breaks out. Russia's massed over 100,000 troops at or near the Ukraine border, adding military might almost daily. I saw one video yesterday of a supposed current picture, if you will, of several dozen, it looked like, Russian tanks over this, you know, massive open space area, just practicing shooting its shells at what, I'm not sure. But we know the White House has been expressing increased alarm about the prospects of war, and Biden certainly has been looking to solidify support among European allies for sanctions, economic jarring ones, if Russia should attack. Anyway, Amazon is more than doubling the maximum base pay it pays employees to $350,000 a year, up from $160,000. Here's what the company told employees yesterday. This past year has seen a particularly competitive labor market, and in doing a thorough analysis of various options, weighing the economics of our business and the need to remain competitive, we decided to make meaningful, bigger increases to our compensation levels than we do in a typical year. Now, no word on how many employees in reality will be affected by this. I mean, the company's long relied on stock shares as awards to entice workers to take positions, even if the base pay were lower, as if $160,000 a year is low. But the stock did languish in 2021, gaining just 2.5%, essentially, while the S&P jumped 27%. Although, if you think about it, in terms of the per share price, $3,174. As of yesterday, anyway. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's good to be king. Now, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at tgscoins.com. I have an article in this new edition about wage growth versus more jobs. Surprising pace of recent job growth may be catching the recent headlines, but as Neil Irwin points out, other details contain the biggest implications for the markets in the months ahead, namely wage growth. As we now know, wages jumped again last month, way above expectations, in fact, and for workers looking for bigger raises that offset the effects of inflation, that's good news. The other side, the higher wages could end up adding more fire to already hot inflation numbers and provoke a more aggressive response from the Fed, already intent on tightening as soon as next month. We know the Fed had been talking. It was presumed that there'd be a series of 0.25% hikes starting in March. Now they're talking about an initial hike then of 0.5%. Time will tell. We're not sure what will happen. Now, the government reported that average hourly earnings were up 0.7% in January and 5.7% over the past year. Thing is, the latest report shows wage increases accelerating, not leveling off or receding, as many economists thought would be happening by about now. Over the 3 months ended in January, average hourly earnings rose at almost 7% annually, and that rolling average has risen in each of the last 4 months. Among non-supervisory workers, the number's closer to 8%. It's the highest since 1981. Well, except for that brief period during the early part of the pandemic, when a lot of figures like these were just way out of whack. For now, though, workers are still playing catch-up to high inflation. Again, economists expect Thursday's CPI to be 7.2 or 7.3% annualized, following annualized increases of 7% in December, 6.8 in November, and 6.2 in October. But Irwin says the flip side of workers catching up will be continuing cost pressures facing businesses this year, especially in the labor-intensive industries. Moreover, if pay keeps rising at higher rates, there's a greater risk, they say, of an outright wage price spiral. That's one thing the Fed hopes to avoid. Now, the main tool that Fed Chair Jerome Powell and his colleagues have to try and stop that from happening is raising rates higher and faster. That explains why Treasury yields rose sharply last Friday and why futures market odds that the Fed raises rates by 50 basis points at its March meeting is now over 40%. And that's almost triple what it had been just a few days earlier. Now, one of Powell's counterparts across the Atlantic is using a more direct approach to try and rein in the wage growth there by urging his citizens to restrain themselves in seeking higher pay. Calm down, lads and lasses. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey said, I'm not saying nobody gets a pay rise, but I think what I am saying is we do need to see restraint in pay bargaining. Otherwise, it will get out of control. Well, Governor Bailey, good luck with that. Given the immense political pushback that Bailey received for those comments, Irwin believes that Powell and Company may want to think twice about talking down wages. Yes, workers need better raises. Any raises just to keep up with higher prices here. But the higher and faster they get them, the more likely the Fed and their global counterparts are going to get nervous that higher inflation has gotten entrenched. And that's no good for anybody. That's the kind of thinking that will just overreach you into another recession. Anyway, inflation certainly isn't moderating anytime soon because of energy costs. I mean, oil prices briefly touched $93 a barrel on Friday as sub-freezing temperatures in Texas raised the risk of short-term supply disruptions. Some crude producers in Texas's oil-rich Permian Basin cut production on Thursday – due to the freezing conditions. And those cuts may have triggered unpleasant flashbacks to last February's unprecedented Texas freeze. You'll remember, the resulting widespread power outages shook the energy industry, taught Americans about the Texas energy grid more than we ever cared to know as non-Texans, no offense, Texans, and led to a sudden and massive price scare, scaring the flannel PJs off millions of Texans. Matt Phillips points out that climbing energy costs often act as a tax on consumption, cutting into the cash available for Americans to spend elsewhere, potentially undercutting an economic rebound or recovery. But wage growth and low interest rates, which have made payments on car loans and mortgages more affordable over the last few years, despite skyrocketing used vehicle prices, means more workers can at least afford to pay more at the pump. Well, for now. Nonetheless, even though higher energy prices may not burden the economy or households too much right now, they will further annoy Americans. Voting Americans, already driven to the edge by 2 years of pandemic living in an all-important election year. Now, the latest jobs report drove a steep rise in treasuries, too, as more investors came around to thinking that the Fed might actually be able to pull off an interest rate rise. Yields now over 1.95%, the highest since December 2019, when gold just a little over $1,500 an ounce and starting its rapid rise to its all-time highs of over $2,000 just 6 months later. Last week's rise in longer-term Treasury yields suggests that investors who have been rightly skeptical that the Fed would be able to embark on a multi-year rate hiking cycle may just be starting to change their minds. We'll know soon enough whether their thinking will be rewarded or betrayed by the decision-makers at the Fed. All right. Now, sort of off the subject, but on in a sense, too. An artist promoting a new digital coin placed a gold cube in Central Park last week. You may have seen this in your local newspaper or particularly TV. Like so many things in Washington these days, the cube is hollow inside. No, this isn't your grandparents' or parents' gold rush. They knew what they were doing when they bought gold and silver coins. This is more akin to King Midas and the excesses of gold in the days of reality TV shows. This latest entry into our cube reality replaces last year's tiny tungsten cubes. Remember that? Hit with folks who have just too much money. This particular gold cube, 410 pounds, worth about 12 million bucks at today's closing gold price. Now, the inevitable NFT, non-fungible token, is scheduled to be launched later this month. An NFT is a digital asset that represents real world objects like art, music, in-game items, and videos. They're bought and sold online, frequently with cryptocurrencies, and they're generally encoded with the same underlying software. And although they've been around since 2014, NFTs are becoming more notorious because they're an increasingly popular way to buy and sell digital artwork, like this gold cube. A staggering $174 million has been spent on NFTs since November 2017. The gold cube's artist, Nicholas Costello, is also selling the Costello coin that was last trading at 0.39 euros. The cube went to dinner on Wall Street last week, in fact. But its whereabouts, after its appearance in Central Park, well, they're now unknown. Remember Mauricio Catalan's gold toilet? It was dubbed America when it debuted and premiered at the Guggenheim Museum, interestingly, near Central Park in 2016. Though the John cost millions to make, Catalan, who's also known for creating a $120,000 banana, said it was a great leveler. He said, whatever you eat, a $200 lunch or a $2 hot dog, the results are always the same toilet-wise. I guess he means it all ends up at the sewage treatment plant. All right. Time we have left today, let's close the program with, well, an unpleasant look at the cost of drug overdoses. Fatal opioid overdoses are costing the economy $1 trillion a year, according to the government. That's $1 trillion each and every year. In a report published today by the bipartisan U.S. Commission on Combating Synthetic Opioid Traffic, it was revealed that synthetic opioids, primarily fentanyl, were responsible for almost 2 in 3 reported drug overdose deaths in the U.S. as of June last year. More than 100,000 people died of drug overdoses during the latest annual period, an increase of 30% from just a year earlier. And overdoses have been responsible for more than 1 million deaths in the U.S. since 1999. That's more than double the number caused by firearms or car accidents. The commission includes representatives from several federal departments and agencies, including Homeland Security, the DEA, as well as members appointed from the Senate and the House. The commission reported that in 2018, the cost of overdose fatalities was just $696 billion. The staggering amount predominantly arose from the lost productivity caused by early deaths, as well as the health care and criminal justice costs related to them. President Biden declared the illicit drug trade a national emergency in his December executive order. That's all the time we have to talk about that story. Perhaps we'll get around to talking about how we forced China's hand to crack down on their pharmaceutical industry. That's all the time we have, though, for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd. You're the man. And to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there, everybody. Bye-bye.